In India, it's called communalism. In Africa, tribalism. In Northern Ireland, sectarianism. What you have in these cases are historically evolved groups that have survived from pre-modern times, which are competing for such things as jobs and access to better housing, education, healthcare for their members. It's generally considered to be a bad thing, and it is, even from a capitalist point of view. Yet attempts are being made, under the name of identity politics, to introduce into modern capitalist countries more such competing groups, people who have some feature in common, such as gender, skin colour, or sexual orientation, are being encouraged to identify with each other and group together to get not just equal consideration, but also bigger material benefits. Those promoting this kind of politics are trying to artificially create a community which didn't exist before. Of course, the people they target do have certain objective features in common, but at the moment, most of those targeted don't regard themselves as a community. So we're talking about an attempt to get people to group together on a new, different basis to engage in politics. I'm going to argue that this is a backward, even dangerous development that should be opposed. But first, something about the structure of present-day society within which politics takes place. We're living in a society which even its own supporters admit is based on scarcity, even if their definition of scarcity is rather eccentric, the absence of sheer abundance as their economics textbooks define it. Scarcity does exist in the normal sense, in that not enough is being produced, and so there's a shortage of the things, services and amenities that people need to lead a healthy and satisfied life. It is a society of artificial scarcity as far as the vast majority is concerned. Society has the means to produce enough for all, in fact, more than enough. Enough food, decent housing, good all-round education, a good health service, enough for everybody could be produced, but isn't and can't be, as it's not profitable. So people are put in a position of having to compete for what there is, and where the rule is that the more money you have, the more and better you get. Or as the Bible put it, to him that hath shall be given. People are in effect rationed by the amount of money they have or can get. For most people, there's not much choice about this. To get money, you can beg, you can steal, or you can work for an employer. Working for wages is the basic way most people get the money to buy what they need. But it means that what people can get is rationed by what they are paid. You can get together with others to try to get a better deal. Socialists have always argued that all those who have to work for wages should join together to get as much as they can, and eventually, as a class, the appropriately named working class, to get rid of the present competitive economic system and replace it with one organised on the basis of the common ownership of productive resources. Unfortunately, this hasn't got very far. There have been attempts, but they failed for reasons that it would be a digression to go into here. Partly because of these failures, people, including activists, have come to think and act as if there is no alternative to the present system of most people having to work for wages to get the money to buy what they need, and that the most that could be done is to get a better deal within the system, whether as an individual or individual family, or as a member of some other group than as an economic class. As a result, practical politics is scarcity politics, where individuals and groups compete to get the most they can of what has been made available. In the cases I mentioned at the beginning, communalism, tribalism, sectarianism, the groups are inherited from a pre-capitalist past. Whether it is a good thing or a bad thing, these groups have already had a long existence and in a sense do constitute a real felt community, at least as far as a shared culture is concerned. Those who promote these groups seek to maintain them, to stop them being broken up through their members joining some other group competing for artificially scarce resources. Socialists, of course, oppose these groups and want their members to organise instead on a class basis. Modern identity politicians start from a different and weaker position. They have to create a new grouping and work to organise their target group as a new competing unit. This brings them too into conflict with socialists who want the members of the targeted groups to organise on a class basis. That is why, I'm suggesting, socialists should be opposed to identity politics. The identity politicians, if they succeed, will only make a bad situation worse by further dividing people, splitting them into more competing groups than there currently are. Having said that, some of the targeted groups, and indeed some of the already historically evolved ones, have a legitimate grievance. They have, and still do, suffer discrimination purely on the basis of what they are. The demand to be considered of equal worth, with the same treatment as any other human being, is a perfectly legitimate demand which socialists accept, make, and practice. There should be no discrimination against anybody on the basis of gender, skin colour, language, or even religion. Every human being, whatever they are, is of equal worth and should be treated as such. Black Lives Matter is a good example. This slogan is an elementary declaration that all lives are of equal worth. But then the question arises of how to put this into practice. Most countries, with notable exceptions of those that practice Sharia law, recognise the legal equality of men and women. In Britain, there is a complete legal equality between them and, in fact, between whites and, to borrow a term, another term from apartheid South Africa, non-whites. The only people living here who suffer from legal disabilities are non-citizens, reminding us that so-called nations are identity groups too, much more powerful and entrenched than those I'm talking about. But a criticism, the concept of the nation-state and nationalist ideology is another talk. Non-discrimination could be said to reflect the logic of capitalism as an economic system. Employers are only interested in the quality of the labour power they purchase. They're not concerned with the other characteristics of their workers, which is why in apartheid South Africa, the big employers were opposed to the colour bar. They wanted to employ the best person for the job, a competent black worker, rather than a less competent white worker. In the end, they got their way. But legal equality, though important, does not end other forms of unequal treatment that arise from being poor and its consequences in terms of worse housing, a worse education, worse health, and inferior healthcare. This is where the identity politician jumps up and adds extra demands to the simple demand for respect and equal consideration, such as the Black Lives Matter slogan. They demand more money be allocated to their target group to improve housing, education, and healthcare services for its members. The trouble is that in the context of the politics of scarcity, this will tend to be at the expense of other groups. Capitalist states only spend on social reforms that improve people's lot if there's also some benefit to the capitalist interest in terms, for instance, of a more educated or fitter workforce. Even then, the amount they spend is limited, since they have to pay for these through taxes that fall directly or indirectly on their profits. Spending too much undermines their competitiveness and the whole profit motive that drives the system. So artificial scarcity is never going to be ended under capitalism. It can't be, as it's built into the system. That we are dealing with a more or less zero-sum situation is explicitly recognised when the claims for quotas and positive discrimination are raised. Here, more for one group means less for some other group. What is the other group expected to do, given that neither group sees any alternative to the present system and accepts that the only politics is the politics of scarcity? They're not going to accept this lying down, but will push back and resist to try to keep what they've got, or think they've got. Identity politics on the one side encourages identity politics on another, making the overall political situation worse. In some cases, this is deliberate, as with racists and nativists, but also with those who talk of white privilege, as if all whites were privileged and should have this taken away. The result is that the basic conflict in society is seen as between whites and blacks, or between women and men, rather than between those who monopolise the means of life and the excluded majority forced to work for wages. As I said, identity politics makes a bad situation worse. Take Northern Ireland. There it was the Protestant identity politicians that started it. 100 years ago, they were allowed to set up a Protestant state for a Protestant people, as one of them put it. If you were a Catholic, you were explicitly a second-class citizen. In the 1960s, a civil rights movement arose calling for equal political rights for all, an end to voting restrictions and gerrymandering, a demand that could easily have been met, and was fairly quickly. The Protestant identity politicians reacted as if it was an existential threat to their statelet. This played straight into the hands of the Catholic identity politicians, and the whole thing kicked off. Eventually, the Catholics won in that they're no longer second-class citizens, but then Protestants no longer got the few extra crumbs in terms of some preference over housing and certain jobs that they used to, hence the simmering resentment that still exists among some of them. I'm not saying that all identity politics will lead to the sort of violence we saw in Northern Ireland. There were specific historical reasons for this, since both sides had a history of resorting to violence to try to get their way. I lived in Belgium for a while, and in and around Brussels, there is a conflict of identity groups between Dutch speakers and French speakers, but it has not led to violence, only to administrative harassment of French speakers and the painting over of French road signs. Flemish identity politics led to the formation, at the time I was there, of a new identity politics party, the FDF, or French Speakers Front. The situation in the United States is another example. Black people there, going back to the time of chattel slavery, have had a very raw deal, and it's not surprising that they want to fight back and get a better deal. However, the artificial scarcity within which politics takes place means that this has to be at the expense of the majority group, who once again are not likely to take this line down, hence the so-called white backlash which Trump exploited. This was predictable, even inevitable within capitalism. Organising or counter-organising into separate groups to compete for a better deal within the artificial scarcity that is built into capitalism is a dangerous road leading to a dead end. The filmmaker Peter Joseph has put this rather well in some of his recent podcasts. I quote, "As long as you have a system based on scarcity-oriented competitive economics, hitting worker versus worker, group versus group, you're never going to see racism resolve on the systemic level, on the cultural level, or the psychological level." Another quote, "Do you honestly think that in a world where everyone is structurally deemed a labour machine to be priced and hence exploited for differential gain as a product, hence the surplus value known as profit in the Marxian sense extracted, do you honestly think people will ever develop a morality to see each other as equals in this life when that is the governing dynamic of human relations from the economic sphere? The economic sphere being the absolute root of our survival and social system, behaviour we're all forced to engage in by coercion of the structure of the economy," end of quote. He is saying this, I think, not as an expression of despair, but as a criticism of those he calls in-system activists, well-meaning people who seek a solution to discrimination and poverty within the present system of artificial scarcity. It's an appeal for action to change the economic structure of society, to work for an economic and social revolution rather than for the reform of the existing system. But what do the in-system activists envisage as success? If they reject, either explicitly or in practice, changing to a system of society organised on a quite different basis, common ownership in place of class ownership, production directly to satisfy people's needs, not for sale on a market with a route of profit. What would things be like if they achieved their aim of eliminating any discrimination against their target group within the existing system? It's hard to resist the conclusion that, logically, they would have to mean, for instance, governments, parliaments, boards of directors, even the top military brass, composed of 50% women and 50% men, or that the percentage of university students from their target group be exactly equal to their percentage in the general population. From the opposite angle, that the same percentage of the majority population should be living in bad housing or in poverty or in prison as their percentage in the population. If that's 90%, then 90% of those in bad housing, poverty or prison should be from the majority group instead of whatever lesser figure than it is now. A redistribution of poverty to benefit the target group. That's not going to get them very far, and why it isn't. In-system activists may regard this as a caricature of their position, but it is a logical conclusion of them trying to obtain more for a particular group in the situation of artificial scarcity that the present system promotes. They may protest that what they want is more resources to be devoted to improve all sections of the population, even if proportionally more for their target group. That, for instance, the percentage of them going to university could be increased without reducing the number of others going there by increasing the total number of university places. They're correct that the resources do exist to improve things for everyone, across the board, and not just in education. However, they fail to realise that the structure and operation of the capitalist economic system prevents this being done. Using existing resources for this purpose can only be achieved in a quite different system, where the aim can be human welfare, not profit, and where artificial scarcity can be replaced by plenty for everyone. The best that can be said of them is that they are goalless militants who see no further than the immediate struggle itself, what Trotskyists used to call mindless militants, somewhat hypocritically, I might add, since in practice they are prime examples of this. There are a couple of other problems with identity politics. The first is their belief, or their assumption, that all in the target group constitute a community. To describe some group as a community, there must be some overriding common interest which binds the group together. The historically evolved groups I mentioned at the beginning do have something of this, but only by virtue of being long established. But even they are not a group with a common economic, with a common survival interest. They are divided into classes, into owners and non-owners, rich and poor, with antagonistic, in fact irreconcilable interests, since the wealth of the wealthy is dependent on the past and present labour of the excluded majority. The same applies to the new identity groups that are envisaged. There are plenty of rich women, gays and non-whites. Those from the excluded majority who are these have a different economic interest from the wealthy members of their supposed community. Their material needs are not fully met, not because of what they are, but because they are part of the excluded majority, obliged to work for wages to live. And so they have more in common with others who are in the same economic position as them, which is why, of course, socialists urge them not to identify themselves with the rich people within their proposed identity group, but instead to identify with their economic class. The other problem is that of who is more discriminated against than now, what identity politics theorists have called intersectionality. Who is more discriminated against, a non-white man or a white woman, and is therefore entitled to more positive discrimination? And then there is the acrimonious dispute between some feminists and the T in LGBT. These are illustrations of what is to come if identity politics takes off and becomes all that politics is. Those in-system activists who stand for equal treatment for their target group within the artificial scarcity of capitalism could protest against the criticism that logically their ideal must be strict proportionality in the distribution of both benefits and disadvantages amongst all groups. They could say that what they want is not that, but that nobody should be discriminated against because they are a woman, gay, black, or whatever, that everybody should be treated as an equal human being. Precisely, so they should. But this undermines the whole basis of identity politics, as it is saying that everyone should be treated as an individual and not as a member of some identity group, whether historical or artificial. Even if equal treatment of women, gays, black people is achieved under capitalism, and there's no reason why in principle it could not be, those in these groups who are not wealthy share owners of means of production will still face discrimination as members of the excluded majority who have to work for wages. They will remain victims of what might be called classism. This is the one discrimination that cannot be ended within capitalism as it is built into the system. In fact, capitalism, as an exploitative, class-divided society, is based on it. Such discrimination can only be ended in a classless society based on the common ownership of productive resources, where everyone has a chance to have an equal say in the way things are run and the same access to what they need to live and enjoy life. In short, where the old socialist principle of from each according to their ability to each according to their needs applies, everybody accorded equal consideration irrespective of what they are, and nobody discriminated against as regards access to material goods, services, or amenities. those who want a better deal for some particular group should not be promoting identity politics within the system that imposes artificial scarcity. They should be working for an end to artificial scarcity. This can only be achieved in a society based on the common ownership and democratic control of productive resources, allowing these to be used to provide the plenty for all that they could, if this, not profit, was the aim of production.